Good morning, and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. So sit back with your cup of coffee, your Danish, your donut, or your low-fat yogurt, and listen in, because we hopefully will have some gems of wisdom for you today, as well as a special guest after the break. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, which is a website entitled blueprintforwealth.org, where you can get articles, videos, and audio, of course, on topics of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. And lastly, please read my column monthly in the Washington Business Journal entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Today, we're going to be talking about an article that a person that I know wrote for Fidelity, and this is a great article. It's a great frame of reference for people who are doing their estate planning and family planning for the future. So the gentleman's name is Tim Habershon. He's an advisor of Family Office Services, and the article was published in January of 2012. And the article is about why building relationship capital is key to securing your family's future. How much capital does your family have? Is there enough to secure a stable and happy future for you and your kids, and even your kids' kids? When the topic is one of financial capital, these are likely familiar questions to anyone dealing with wealth transfer concerns. But what many families often fail to see is an opportunity to build relationship capital through engaging conversations. It's more of an intangible but equally important step to incorporate when you're establishing your family's wealth planning goals. I've spent a good part of my career advising and working with wealthy families, as has Tim Habershon, to develop strategies for moving assets over the course of time. Traditionally, assets implies tangible items with monetary value, such as businesses or possessions or liquidity. And they're most commonly the focus of estate planning and wealth transfer conversations. But assets also consist of intangible things like relationships, values, plans for the future, and they may require a long time or even a lifetime to pass down to loved ones. In our work, we define relationship capital as a relational reserve of goodwill that allows families to talk about anything. Reserve, because it must be built up over time, so it's there when you need it. Goodwill captures the richness and complexity that's required to create an open dialogue. It encompasses trust and loyalty and positive beliefs, benefit of the doubt, honesty, transparency, safety, grace, forgiveness, an ability and a commitment to communicate, and much, much more. These individual components must be the focus of relationship building within your family. Passion is there. It's to help families conduct conversations and develop relationship skills that allow them to plan their wealth transfer and have healthier, more intimate family relationships as a result. Wow. That's exciting, right? Well, you can successfully transition your financial assets, but you can also actually use a process to create a stronger family and build relationship capital. I think my wife is an expert at building relationship capital, and she does so in a very subtle way with all of our kids. If you want to strengthen your family, you can't just have hope that it'll happen. In fact, the natural tendency in most families is to avoid communicating about wealth and about transition of assets from one generation to the next. And senior generation family members like to do their planning behind a cloak of secrecy and isolation. So, is there a way to defy this tendency? Tim Habershon believes that there is, if you follow his four guiding principles, each illustrated with a hypothetical. Guiding principle number one, normalize wealth and planning. When family topics become supercharged or hidden or fear-based, they go unaddressed and create emotional distance, resentment, and a lack of individual and family integration. Take the example of a family in which the parents were first-generation entrepreneurial wealth builders. Because growing up wealthy wasn't normal to them, they didn't know how to make it seem normal to the kids, so they literally masked their total assets by covering all but the signature line on their kids' tax documents every year. But by treating offspring like immature children well into their 20s, the parents created some deep resentment within the children. When they finally agreed to disclose their wealth, they had the attorney handle the conversation instead of using it as an opportunity to create intimacy and build relationship capital with kids. The subsequent fallout with the kids required a family intervention to deal with their history of wealth secrecy. So this is why it's so important to normalize the discussion of wealth by talking early and often about money. It can be done by holding discussions when your kids are young about investing and saving, having a proper work ethic, providing for family members in the future, and how to help people in need. Guiding principle number two, have the right people talking about the right things at the right time and in the right way. Conversely, most communication conflict comes when we have the wrong people talking about the wrong things at the wrong time in the wrong way, including no one talking about anything. This is what happens when a senior generation family member called his wife and four kids together for dinner in order to make an announcement. His objective was to inspire the next generation to be active philanthropists, but instead, his surprise declaration regarding his plans to distribute his fortune had the opposite effect, causing the family to criticize his decisions and gang up on him. If he had met with each family member individually and fostered a two-way dialogue and feedback before bringing everybody together for this thoughtful discussion, he likely would have achieved his goals. Instead, he got what he most feared, an evening that ended in fractured family relationships and a lost opportunity to inspire the kids about his philanthropic vision. A better approach may be to empower the family. First, let everyone know that they have a role in the wealth discussion and planning process. Second, define the different roles people have. Determine what the content of the different conversations should be, and decide when and how different people will be involved, and declare what effective family communication looks like. This maxim should be a lifetime principle for families. But it also happens to work well in helping direct wealth and planning conversations. Guiding principle number three, follow the voice, not vote rule. When Tim suggests that all family members should have a role in the planning process, it can create fear in the older family members, who think that he's saying that everyone gets a vote. In fact, we don't believe families are a democracy. Sorry, kids. The decision control should be defined by the person who owns the assets. The general rule should be this: the more impact a decision has on them, the more voice you should give them. Even at a young age, giving a voice to children builds self-respect. It teaches them how to ask questions and express opinions, and gives them a sense of destiny and influence over their future. A classic example of a decision made without the voice, not vote principle is one pertaining to a senior generation business owner and father who made asset distribution decisions involving his kids based only on assumptions. While living, he chose to give his business to the one son he assumed had a vested interest. He then gave a large amount of cash to a second son he assumed had no interest in the business and gave other possessions and property to his other daughters. Because this was done with no prior family conversations, his kids had no voice, and therefore their wishes were not apparent. Thankfully, a happy ending was achieved after he was encouraged to have an open conversation about his decisions. He then learned that one of his daughters was very interested in working in the business, and all four kids preferred to be shareholders and stay connected to the legacy. In the end, the father's estate planning was realigned to accommodate the voices of his kids, resulting in a unified family vision. Guiding principle number four, build on wish, not fear. Think about the incredible tension that exists between wish and fear when it comes to family nurturing. People typically have a strong innate family wish around relationships, dreams, lifetime goals, and family legacies. And yet, so many of our actions and decisions within our families are driven by fear, which ironically can destroy the wish. Take parenting, for example. Many of us wish for our kids to be independent, but our fear keeps us from letting them spread their wings and making their own decisions. I'm a classic example of that. We wish for them to have a strong voice in life, but our fear of losing control keeps us from giving them a voice with us. We wish for them to have financial security from our efforts, but our fear that they may become spoiled and have the sense of entitlement keeps us from engaging them in conversations around wealth and planning for the future. To build relationship capital, families must embrace the wish over the fear. And in my experience, and in Tim Habershon's experience, the wish is always under the surface as the inverse of the expressed fear. Often, when we're talking with families and we hear their fears coming through, we stop the conversation and ask, "Where's the wish?" With some reflective coaching, they can re-engage with the wish and discuss the behaviors that are associated with the wish versus the fear. In your wealth and transition planning process, we suggest embracing the principle of seeking the wish. Now, this is from an article written by Tim Habershon of Family Office Advisors out of Boston. He's an expert, and you can email him at timothy.habershon@fmr.com. I'm Wayne Zell, and I've had the pleasure of talking to you about if money talks, so should you today. If you've got questions, give us a call at Odin Feldman and Pittleman at 703-218-2100. And thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth.